Hey guys, how's it going? My name is Joseph Fordham and this is NPLH In Conversation With, the football podcast that isn't about football, brought to you by NPLH Studio. NPLH is more than a podcast. Once you've hit the follow button, visit nplhmag.com to enjoy online reads, subscribe to our newsletter and browse our collection of magazines, prints and apparel. On to the show. Hello, I'm Joe Fordham and you're listening to NPLH. This time I'm in conversation with photographer Matthew Dingle. With today's countless avenues into a photography career, Matthew's journey began in the somewhat traditional all-American surrounds of his high school newspaper. What was initially an excuse to get out of class quickly became a conduit to his creative side, exposing a career path worth pursuing. Whilst COVID derailed plan A, it presented him with a plan B. Fast forward a few short years and Matthew regularly finds himself on the touchline of Atlanta United's Mercedes-Benz Stadium, as well as on the inside of Arsenal's most recent US tour. As well as undeniable talent, Matthew possesses a self-awareness beyond his years, an understanding of what it takes to make it at the top level, and a hunger to meet those requirements head-on. The Holy Trinity hinting at a long, successful future in the industry. Before we start, a quick reminder that NPLH is more than a podcast. Visit nplhmag.com where you can enjoy online reads, subscribe to our weekly newsletter and browse our ever-growing collection of magazines, prints and apparel. NPLH is an independent ad-free platform and your support in whatever form keeps us playing. Enjoy the episode.
How are you?
Yeah, mate. You've completely surprised me. I've just got some music on. I'm going to have to turn it off.
Yeah, no, go right ahead.
There we go. I'm back in position. The blanket keeping me warm is just out of shot. I look professional again. We're here.
Well, trust me, we can talk about it later, but the temperature drop compared to yesterday to now where I live has been just absolutely mental as well.
Oh, man. Well, it's good to meet you.
Yes, it's good to meet you as well. How are you?
Yeah, good. Where are you?
So I am in Atlanta, Georgia right now.
Oh, nice. I've never been, but my friend from school spent, I think, 3 years in Savannah.
Tutoring, oh, really?
And that may not even be near Atlanta.
Well, it's interesting. So from a UK perspective, it's pretty far. But in America, it's about 5 hours south, which, to be honest with you, if you told anyone from here that, they'd be, oh, that's just a quick road trip.
Okay, yeah. So you've got like a little, you've got a mini Vegas kind of vibe.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. So it's, once upon a time, it probably was. Nobody really goes there anymore, to be honest with you.
But... okay. I want to stress that this is not a derogatory comment in any way, but your surname is something that I didn't know existed or I've not come across outside of a British soap opera called Emmerdale, which is set in a farming village. So do you have any British roots?
I do. I'm a British citizen.
Ah, yes.
I mean, but you're completely right because you wouldn't find that anywhere else outside of the UK.
Yeah.
So nice, your intuition was correct on that. Yes.
That's it. It's a great start for me. My ego enjoyed that.
Right. Yeah, no. So my dad he grew up in Exeter in Devon. And he moved to London right out of university, I think. And that's where he met my mom. My mom's originally from Long Island in New York. And from there, that's how the US, UK came into the mix. And then I somehow ended up in Atlanta.
Thank you for sparing the time for me today. I know we've only had a few back and forths and it's good. I mean, I only recently came across your work and, yeah, it's fantastic. And I don't know how I hadn't seen it before.
Well, same for you as well, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of, people, in this industry, I feel like you sort of stay within your circle when you found a few people. And I'm probably guilty as, just as everybody else of just, there's times when I'm really good at finding new things and other times when it's kind of drops off. And, like you said, you came across me and then I found your whole platform. And I was just amazed that I hadn't, come across you earlier, to be honest with you.
Well, don't feel too bad about it. That's because I am very bad at social media.
For somebody that's on it as much as I am, I feel like I'm not much better, to be honest with you.
So, Nomadic Lens, your handle.
Yes.
does this hint at the crossing of two passions?
It comes from a very, I suppose, naive place, because I made it when I was still in high school or secondary school here in the US. And, you know, I was like, oh, I want to be different. I don't want to just make my handle Matt Dingle Photography, because I feel like I had already seen that enough. And so a couple of my friends at the time, they were like, oh, let's just like brainstorm some, you know, silly little brand names or something like that. And Nomadic Lens came up, and I, for whatever reason at the time, I was, you know, I was still in high school. I wasn't traveling for this by any means, but, you know, I was like, that sounds like something that I would be interested in, because it sort of represents, you know, I've got various different interests that traditionally may not be connected to one another. And obviously I know that this is going to be a photography centric page. So I was just like, nomadic, moving around a lot, lens photography. And I just stuck with it, thankfully, because it sort of, at first it seemed kind of silly to name something like that, but you know, the more that I worked through it and sort of stuck with it, I was very happy that I did.
It's a good handle, and it kind of gives you scope wherever you go with your career, figuratively speaking. It does lend itself to versatility in your field, right?
Right, exactly. That, you know, versatility, if there was one word that I would hope to use to sort of summarize where I would like to be at the end of whatever, at that, when it's all said and done, I would like to think of, you know, that versatility, not necessarily being boxed in to one thing, because that's something I've always felt that, you know, going into a creative career got me out of. And, you know, sort of embracing that through however means I can control was, you know, it was a massive part of that, basically.
So touching on that and heading into your creative career, can we rewind a bit and go back to your origin story?
Yeah. So it, you know, it started out in not this, you know, absolutely the giant grand scheme of things, you know, the creative career can be found in anything. But traditionally, when I was in high school, I was in the yearbook class, making the school yearbook. And, you know, I knew that I had to start somewhere. And I knew that, you know, looking back now, I needed to be in a position where it was just trying something. But, you know, I didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, I still had that foundation of football. And, you know, it had been in my life since I was born, effectively. And, you know, just picking up that camera and going around, mainly to get out of class, but, you know, picking up the camera and just going to shoot the various sports going around at school, you know, I sort of began to feel a connection there. And sort of being able to keep that creative aspect of myself that I had always had ever since I was little, I felt, you know, this could be something that I pursue. And, you know, so I was on my way. I was like, you know, I'm going to apply to these art schools when I graduate from high school and go into university. And then COVID sort of threw a wrench in all of that. And suddenly it felt like nothing really mattered. You know, the sort of modern constructs of the 9-to-5 were definitely put to the test with working at home and everything like that. And then I had this great opportunity to be on a podcast with, at the time, he was just starting out as the touring photographer for the band The 1975. His name is Jordan Curtis Hughes. And, you know, he had, you know, had this initiative of staying at home. I want to do something with this time. So I'm just going to get a bunch of aspiring photographers on a call and just talk to them. And after that phone call, you know, I was obviously starstruck because I was a big fan of them, you know, growing up musically. And it just made me realize that this is seriously something that I could pursue. And, you know, staying at home, I was consuming so much, developing my tastes and everything like that. And when things started to reopen, I had the opportunity to shoot for cover Atlanta United through different like media outlets. And that's kind of just when the floodgates open, to be honest with you. Just that consumption, taking everything in, discovering people very much like yourself that were just opening up the doors to anybody that, you know, what do you do? What is it like? And, you know, that's, you know, it just kind of got me to where I am now, to be honest with you.
Yeah. What is that like walking out and you're covering, you're working in front of 70,000 people? I get to work just in front of myself and you've come out of COVID. And then just, as you say, yeah, the floodgates have opened and it's just, it's all happening in front of you there. What's that like as an adjustment?
You know, it's something that the older I get and the more of a grasp I have on these things, the more I'm realizing it can affect me. Because, you know, when I was starting out, you know, I'm 21, I'll be 22 in a few weeks. So, you know, all of this sort of happened very quickly. And I'm in a, you know, I was in those very crucial years in my early adolescence or late adolescence where it, I was kind of just taking it in, you know. Recently when I was doing my second preseason tour with Arsenal, they were playing Man United at MetLife Stadium just outside of New York City. And I think there was just shy of 90,000 people there. And, you know, that crowd is not necessarily something I've necessarily always thought about because, you know, I'm just as much as anybody talking to you right now, you know, you have to sort of think about what you want to say. And, you know, that Arsenal Man United game was the first time I had really just thought to myself, there's a lot of people here. And exactly. And, you know, that's something that social media, as much as it's sort of, you know, put its own spin on art and physical media, I think one thing that it has been good for me at least, it's kind of almost in a way sort of distracted me from just how many people can see my work. Because, you know, that's, you know, just always just being in the arts in general, you know, it's always so closely tied to your personal feelings and your personal beliefs and what you as an artist bring to the table. And, you know, having that many eyes on your work at one, you know, just at one time in general, it's such an adrenaline rush, but at the same time, it's pretty terrifying when you stop and think about it, which is good for me because I need that, you know, I need to be able to look at where I started and, you know, the 18-year-old version of myself would have never believed that I would be doing this now. And, you know, sort of looking back and sort of retrospectively thinking, you know, what would he want, you know, somebody that's in the point that I'm at right now, what would he want to see from that person that's different from everybody else? You know, so that sort of retrospective way of looking at it, it's absolutely terrifying, as you said, but it's so necessary at the same time, I feel like.
Yeah, it's interesting that you've pulled up your 18-year-old self to your 21-year-old self, because even now you're incredibly young to be, well, just in my opinion, at the level that you're at now. And maybe that's naivety on my part. Your work is very accomplished at this stage. So that obviously speaks to a lot of time spent on your craft. So that's time well spent. When I was 21, I was drifting around an island in Southeast Asia for a little bit. Definitely wasn't honing any of my skills and came back to that, what I would consider too late. Not too late to do anything, but, you know, just where you, to the point where you can enjoy the fruits of your skills and explore areas with that, but you're always left with the little niggling thought, oh, what would have happened if I'd have had the confidence or the conviction to just go for that a little bit earlier. So it's quite driven for your age when there are so many other distractions, not to sound patronizing, when there are so many other distractions for a 21-year-old to be doing, even a 31-year-old. I think I was still drifting. So where does that focus come from?
Well, it's, I'm going to try to not be too nihilistic about this, but to be honest with you, it comes from, in my opinion, just coming to an age where, you know, in America, it's very, you know, from my first year in high school where I was, I can't remember, I was younger than 16, you know, it's very driven that you're there to then get into college, to then have already made a decision about what you're doing for the rest of your life. And I, you know, at some point across the line, I just realized that I didn't really have that decision made. And all I had was, you know, what I enjoyed doing, so to speak. And, you know, when you're entering your final years of college and all you have is, well, I don't really know what I like to do, but I know what I enjoy doing in my own time. That doesn't always work. So you get to this weird place where there's this very corporate spin that you have to put on things. And I guess I just realized that there's no real alternative here. And that's kind of where COVID came at a perfect time. because, you know, everybody, even people that were, you know, quote, corporate at the time, you know, there was this whole DIY arts and crafts movement that I guess you could say sort of happened on social media. And it kind of made me realize that, you know, there's definitely a industry to be made out of this because there's plenty of people doing what I enjoy doing full time. And I sort of just prepared myself, you know, when it comes time for me to start doing this in person, when things are opening up, what does that look like? Who can I reach out to? Like, so I sort of used the hunger of there's no real alternative here. And I kind of just went with that. And, you know, whether or not that was a good decision in hindsight, like you said, I'm still so young, you know, it still feels like, you know, it still feels like there's so much for me to do. And there's so little time to do that now that, you know, it's, you know, I would just have to say it was that hunger and that realization of what am I doing here? You know?
Yeah. It's, you've said something there that hints at quite a methodical approach to a creative outlet or to making a creative outlet your career. And I'm reading a book at the moment, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. Do you know it?
Right. I haven't, but it sounds like something I would be interested in.
Yeah, I'm not far into it, maybe 80 pages at the moment. And the writer is basically talking about two types of people, classic and the classical and the romantic. And the romantics tend to be the more artistic, creative types that just see something for what it is, surface level. And the classical are looking at what something, how something is, basically. And this is a bit of a tangent, I know, but trust
me. No, go for it. Go for it.
Just taking a baseline for a walk. And so all this is basically told through the, like, using a motorcycle trip cross country with his friends as the vehicle, literally and figuratively, to put this point across. And he understands how his motorbike works in and out. So something goes wrong on the road, he can fix it, or he'll understand what's wrong. He might, you know, whatever. The person he's riding with doesn't. He just likes the experience of riding the bike, cross country, you know, wind in his hair, whatever. He sees the bike for what it is on the surface, which is a means to experience nature and, you know, cruise around or whatever. And where this relates to what you just said is you are a romantic in that you are a creative person, but you've adopted the classical approach in that you've broken down how you can make that a feasible means to earn a living. So it's interesting. You've got both sides working there. Why use 10 words, Matthew, when I can use 100 to try and get my point across?
Well, no, but like in the sense that, you know, the romantic side of looking at things, I do the exact same thing. You know, it's for me, the 10 word way of doing that is through a photo. You know, if you were to ask me the reason why of X, Y, and Z behind, you know, 5 photos that I've taken that I'm proud of, I could have a 6-hour conversation about that, you know? And I think that sort of, this may just be the way that I was inspired through the different art that I was exposed to before I actually picked up a camera and did something myself, was, you know, that methodical approach to things is something that I always appreciated because I suppose I lacked that in the creative side of things, you know, organizing your thoughts and figuring out how you want to say something when what you want to say is so intrinsically tied to who you are as a person. Having that sort of methodical way of going about it through the other means of, like, you know, the business side of things or how I want to achieve a certain goal, I probably adopted that to compensate for the fact that I could talk for 10 hours about, you know, 2 photographs or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That, That makes perfect sense. Now, could you speak for the same amount of time about the workings of a camera with the same passion?
It would have to be filtered through things that I've done that I feel very creatively tied to be honest with you, because I'm entirely self-taught in photography. As you know, I think, you know, most people would agree with that, that in some certain sense they are self-taught, but you know, it's photography is more or less the vehicle that I'm using, like you said, the motorcycle of getting something out creatively, I would say.
Yeah. So you definitely lean more towards the romantic. That's it. Yeah. Based on that, in the short time that you've been doing this, any harsh lessons, like coming into it at such a kind of a prominent platform, Atlanta, any early harsh lessons that you've had to learn from?
I would say, you know, this is going to tie into what I was going to add on before, you know, the realization that there is a very clear difference, specifically in photography, between whether or not you view it as utilitarian or whether or not you view it as art. And that's something that I was aware of, but I wasn't necessarily familiar with how closely related the two aspects of it were. And, you know, covering games and covering, you know, different events and things like that, I'm one of however many people get approved for the event. And, you know, you learn very quickly why it is there is so much conversation about breaking the norms of the industry and sort of seeing beyond what has been established. And I didn't necessarily realize that until I was in an environment, you know, where, you know, I still have a very fairly starter level setup with my equipment. And, you know, I'm seeing, you know, people with four times what I have and lenses six times the size and things like that. And, you know, those doubts do creep into your mind, but at the same time, you know, I sort of have to remind myself that that's not necessarily a bad thing that I thought about that, but I need to rely on what I've done up until this point, because it's clearly been well received. It's clearly been artistically recognized. So I need to sort of continue that, you know, intuition, that little voice in my head that's telling me what you're doing is fine. Stay with what you know, and you'll get where you need to go. I would say that's probably the biggest, you know, lesson that I've learned as I continue to grow into a more like serious space, I guess.
Yeah. And if you've got one eye on what everyone's doing around you, that's one less eye on what you're doing yourself. And that's where you need to be focused.
100%.
Yeah. And that your biggest tool is your eye as well, right? You don't necessarily need to have all of the bells and whistles that other people have got there. It's like your main asset is what you see, or how you can foresee something turning out in post.
Right.
Get something in frame that will get you to the bit down the line. Doesn't have to be all in camera.
No, exactly.
And I used to assist a guy that would slap me if he heard me say that. I hope he doesn't. I hope he's completely forgotten about me and has no idea that I do this podcast, because he would find me and slap me.
Right. But, you know, at the same time, it's like one of the biggest tools, and this is something that I have been having conversations about with people in my own life who are perhaps looking at more of an artistic career or way of making a living or whatever like that. You know, one of my biggest things that I tell them is your biggest tool is going to be whatever you consume, you know, whatever that is, through movies, through media, through books. The biggest tool is that inspiration you get through other various forms of whatever it may be. And you can't necessarily quantify that. You know, if I sit here and I tell you that I've, you know, certain black and white photos have been inspired by these very old movies that I've watched, I can't necessarily quantify why that is that I like that so much and I've drawn from it, but it's what that emotional, you know, little voice in my head is telling me that would look good when I'm looking at, you know, I'm obviously looking at a player that's 10 feet in front of me in color. But if I then think to myself while I'm shooting it, that's a really good black and white photograph. I can't quantify why I'm thinking that, but that sort of intuitive emotional and creative drive that I have to make that is something that, you know, like you said, doesn't always have to be in camera when I'm looking at it, but I know when it goes out there, there's a side of things that regardless of what gear you have, I'm relying on myself.
Yeah. And you're seeing something that isn't there.
Right.
Many people will just see what is in front of them and that's where it ends.
But right.
Yeah. That's where your creativity comes in. Where do you go off to in terms of inspiration? You mentioned old black and white movies there. So when you're not shooting football, what are you doing? Where are you taking in your influences?
Probably, like I suggested earlier, film. You know, that was one of the biggest things for me growing up because, you know, I'm just a kid watching movies. But then when I started to realize that, you know, there's seriously an emotional aspect of this that I'm relating to, I sort of began thinking about, you know, how can that sort of influence me? And then another probably bigger aspect than film for me would be music. You know, I don't know if it was a study or if it was just a social media post that I had seen, but somebody suggested, you know, those years between 14 and 18 are where you sort of get that really formative core musical taste that you have for the rest of your life. And for me, those years were when I really started to connect on a more personal creative side to art with music. And, you know, like I had said, when I had that conversation with a photographer for a musical artist that I had previously, before I had even ever talked to him, had such a, I guess, emotional creative connection to, those dots sort of began forming in terms of, you know, this is what I like. This is what I kind of want to do full time. How can I sort of draw those two things together? Because, you know, like many people said, if you do what you like for a living, you'll never work a day in your life. But, you know, it's also, are you good at it and do you enjoy it as well? So that's sort of where I found that cross section.
Yeah, are you good at it and do you enjoy it? That's an interesting one, because you can be good at something and not necessarily enjoy it. And that's one of nature's cruel tricks.
No, exactly.
In terms of what you're shooting and how you're shooting it, do you kind of feel that you miss any kind of connection with people there? Would you see yourself going into more like commercial setups and studio-based work rather than the action side of things?
To a certain extent, I've shot so much of football and matches and, you know, this, that, and the other as it relates to actual games, simply because it's what I had access to. It's what I was exposed to. It's what I had an easy in with. And, you know, it's interesting because so much of what has inspired me creatively is completely separate from all of that. And, you know, obviously the more I refine how I see myself as a photographer, just simply through shooting things, you know, there's so many different outlets that I hope that I'm able to sort of tap into. You know, recently I had, you know, music photography was always one thing that inspired me heavily as well. And recently I first shot my first major massive concert through the Arctic Monkeys when they came to town about a month ago. And the creative lethargy that I felt when I had edited those photos and put them out, it was unlike anything I had done before, because I felt like I was tapping into something that, like I said, going back to that 18-year-old version of myself had originally felt such a strong connection to. And it's not to say that I don't feel that with football. I absolutely do now, because it's, you know, it's just through seeing what I've seen and doing what I've done, you know, I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I would say music photography is one of those things. And like you had mentioned, studio photography as well, because I think there's so much more expression there in terms of what I am physically doing and sort of the emotion that I'm bringing out of it. And in this similar voice, that's why I love, you know, what I've been doing so much so far through live matches and fan culture, because there's no guarantee I'm going to get a very emotional shot. And if I do, I only have one chance to get it. And so I think that's why, you know, it's probably akin to being a bit of an adrenaline junkie. When that one moment that you didn't know you were going to get shows up in front of you, and you look in your camera and you're like, thank God I got that, because in the moment that's not scripted. you know, recently when Inter Miami came to Atlanta, it was about a month ago as well, Messi didn't travel. So obviously one of the biggest aspects were the amount of people that came with Messi jerseys or Miami jerseys expecting to see him there. Just the sort of, just even though they knew he wasn't there, there was still a bit of anticipation that just maybe. And sort of one of my favorite shots was of a young fan leaning over. He was almost falling off the stanchion that he was on, but he was leaning over to sort of get closer to the action, and he was holding a Messi jersey. And just that photo, despite the fact he wasn't there, I could have never scripted that happening in front of me, which is one of the things why, like I said, that sort of fan culture, football, live match aspect of things has just become so just crucial to me as a photographer, because it's real world. I can't stage it.
Does the lack of control over that impact your interests in shooting that way in any way? Or do you think, I mean, you mentioned the fact that a studio setup could allow you a different means of expression. And by that, I'm assuming you mean more control, not in a negative way, but more control over the environment and therefore more scope for your creativity to shine through. Whereas, yeah, you don't have that at all on a touchline. So you're very limited in putting yourself across in that way.
I think it's definitely that sort of lack of control has made me become a better photographer, because one of the things that I think, you know, like we said at the very beginning, sort of going beyond the expectations of the industry or the genre of photography that I'm currently in, I think a lot of people will go into it with one expectation. And then when they get to a certain point and they realize that there's not so much that they can control, it almost becomes monotonous. And I think always ensuring that you have the creative voice in the back of your mind telling you to constantly look for something new, where there may not be an automatic, you know, oh, this goal happened or this crazy thing happened during a match, constantly looking for that, you know, that way out of the usual and what's expected, and sort of tapping into, you know, what's going on, you know, necessarily behind me that I, you know, even somebody watching the game that's there might not see. You know, sort of looking for the new, I guess you could say, is something that shooting those matches on a touchline has taught me to be more mindful of.
That keeps you sharp.
Exactly. It sort of forced me to constantly be thinking to myself in real time, you know, let's not have my lens pointed across the pitch for 90 minutes. Let's, you know, if something isn't necessarily happening or there's, you know, there's a foul and there's a few minutes where I don't necessarily need to be focused on that, what if I turned around and I see what's going on around me? You know, that sort of mindfulness is something that just in general as a person is good to exercise. But sort of when you bring that into an environment like a live match, it's 10 times more difficult. And it's something that I'm very grateful that I have to constantly remind myself of.
Yeah, it's a really good level of self-awareness and being aware of your environment. There is one story happening on the pitch, and then there's thousands happening behind you, right? So you can
exactly
find one and tell that. Yeah, very, very astute point. Your career, were there any, and this is often the case I find with some people going into creative pursuits, opposition or kind of concerns from family, because there are no guarantees with your career, no kind of paycheck on the last Friday of the month, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mum and dad kind of like, you sure about this, Matt? You know, there's
well, it's, you know, it's, that was, this is probably one of the second biggest lessons that I've learned, because initially I had decided to go to art school. And when the reality of what that looks like in the United States, where after 4 years, you have almost $250,000 in debt, when that sort of reality set into me, it only took about 2 weeks, to be fair. I decided that this probably goes back to the hunger that I had. You know, I decided I was going to drop out and I was going to go to a standard state school. which is where I'm finishing up my final year right now, actually. That sort of transition is something that, looking back now, my parents had told me, we wanted you to have that realization yourself. They said, you know, we knew it was going to come at some point because we know, you know, thankfully I was around two parents that had sort of had the understanding of how much something like this had meant to me. You know, doing something that wasn't traditional, wasn't what I knew I didn't want to do. So they were like, you know, we wanted you to experience that so you can then build a base upon having to seriously work on it. Because they knew, you know, like you said, a paycheck wasn't always guaranteed, and it still isn't. But, you know, it's that realization that you have to really be about this if you want it. And I think that is when I'm sort of in that corner is where most of my best work comes from, because I'm seriously having to consider what inspires me. This really has to work. What does it look like? And, you know, I've been very, very grateful in terms of what I've had access to, because it's all about who you know and what you're doing at a moment where an opportunity comes. And, you know, just being around two parents that at first were probably very scared for me, but when they realized that, you know, he really wants this and this is seriously something that he wants to work on, we just need to let him experience it and then come back to us with, all right, that didn't work. You know, I need to figure this out for myself.
Yeah, that support is priceless.
Absolutely.
The cynic in me would, as British, so I'm inherently cynical. You've gone to your parents with two options, $250,000 of debt, or I'm going to go into this photography career. And they were very supportive of the one that didn't involve $250,000 worth of debt. You played them.
And, you know, it's, you know, my dad, like I said, he's from Exeter. So from the beginning, it's the concept of that ever being the case in the first place was just staggering to him. And I probably needed that voice because, you know, it's, I would have fallen, you know, subject to what a lot of young people do is that, you know, in the United States, at least, they're sort of, you know, oh, we know that you want to do this and we know that it's really difficult for you to get into this. So if you just bear with us for 4 years, we'll get you the connections that you need. And that's something that it sounds very cynical of me to sort of go on about this, but after experiencing it from both sides, it's something I'm very passionate about when it comes to letting young people know that you don't always have to go the one route that has seemingly been, you know, forced upon you in terms of going to art school, going to private school. You know, it's if you want it and you're willing to sort of put up with, you know, having to put in extra hours at your regular job during the 4 years that you're trying to figure this out, it's okay. There's so much time for you to figure this out because at the end of the day, there's not just one way of doing this. If there was, this would be considered a 9-to-5. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're paying for it with your time rather than a crippling debt, basically, from an antiquated system. That makes total sense. Sticking with your parents for a minute and your dad being from Exeter, which is a really nice part of the country, I don't know if you've ever been.
Not in my adult life. I went when I was about, I want to say 6 or 7. We spent some time over there and we spent some time in Cornwall. But recently I went back in January to London for the first time on my own with another photographer in my adult life. And so that I would say that trip has definitely brought me a new perspective on where a new aspect of my emotional passion in terms of being creative with football has sort of changed. And sort of it's brought me into a new light in terms of this is something I want to explore a lot more.
The game looks a lot different in every country, and it's fascinating to kind of dip your toe into it. But yes, sorry, going back to your parents there, do you notice the cultural nuances between having a British dad and an American mum when it comes to positivity and encouragement towards pursuing these things, because we like, you know, you've got a saying, only in America, and that's attributed to something positive happening. It's a very, I'm generalizing massively, but if something bad happens here, in inverted commas, it's like, oh, of course, that's like a only here kind of thing. So I'm just wondering if your dad has kind of had the positivity of the US psyche rubbed off onto him well and truly, or if you notice the two different kind of styles, and you've got the kind of the good cop and the bad cop. When you come to a situation like you pursuing this career, you've got your mum saying, yeah, go for it, and your dad more reserved, pragmatic kind of the more pragmatic kind of approach.
Right. It's, you know, it's sort of add on to that. My dad is a Leeds fan. So, you know, I think it's for, as somebody who has, you know, like we said earlier, had such a, I don't want to say a difficult time making those big decisions because they're so closely related to my emotive state. I think having, like you said, the two sides to every way of looking at a situation is absolutely the way it is. And, you know, that's not to say that my dad is never looking at the bright side of things, because I absolutely think he does. But there's sort of a grounded level of, well, have you thought about it this way? You know, or there's so many times where I'll be on the, you know, on the phone with my mom and she'll say to me, you know, have you talked to your dad about this? Because she knows that while it may not be something that she necessarily, I don't want to say disagrees with, but it's a different way of looking at things. And having both the go for it and the hang on, mate, have you thought about this? It's allowed me to stay very grounded, I think. Because, you know, not to say that this is any sort of, there's any level of fame that gets attached to doing this, but, you know, this is going to sound absolutely ridiculous now that I'm hearing myself say it. But when I was on my last tour with Arsenal, you know, there were two separate situations where I was waiting to go out with a few of the players, and I was waiting in the team hotel, and, you know, I had people come up to me, and I had no idea who they were, but they knew who I was, and they wanted to like talk to me and get a picture with me. And that had never happened before. And I, you know, in a weird way, my first thought was from the perspective of my dad, who, like I said, he's a Leeds fan. It's all about the way football has been since the 60s when he first started taking it in. You know, what does that foundation of being the common man look like? And that's something that I've constantly had to sort of filter my thoughts through, because, yeah, I'm going off on a tangent now, but, you know, with modern football, it seems to in some sense be about a lot of things apart from that. And that's something, you know, especially after going back to England, has made me realize that I want to capture, you know, the way, the sort of the foundations of English football with the common man, and, you know, sort of taking that on a very microscopic level, with my dad being, you know, one of the reasons that gives me sort of pause when I'm making a decision, to, you know, on a much larger scale, how do I, you know, when somebody like, you know, that has no real investment into the creative industry sees my work, what do they see? And that's something that I absolutely want to make sure that I'm portraying. You know, I'm just a kid with a camera who had access to the things that he'd been watching since he could remember watching football on the television every weekend.
It's interesting that he gives you that pause, right? And that's, right. I guess that's something that will eventually become autopilot, but it is really easy in the moment. And I can imagine in, you know, in your line of work, and it's all happening so fast, and a lot of good things coming your way very quickly, to just be caught up in it and end up in like a reactive state without necessarily thinking about the next move. Just kind of going with it. And there's a lot to be said for just kind of holding, like, you know, holding your run. And yeah, having that input will prove valuable for you at right. at this stage of your career, right? How are you finding it, navigating it in these early stages, like the progression and the networking side of things? Because that's another element entirely, right? You've got a, you're like, you're not just a photographer, you're sales, you're selling yourself, and it's all of these hats you've got to wear.
Right. You know, it's like you said, it's 50% photography, 50% business, I feel. And regardless of how I feel on a given day when I wake up, those messages always have to go out. And that's, you know, one thing I think a lot of people get sort of caught up in, or sort of they find issue with when it comes to constantly moving forward. You know, it's even when you think you have a handle on things, you come across a situation or someone's work that makes you realize that there's so much to be done. And I think that was very early on, I sort of had to tap into the hunger that I had in terms of making this work, where, you know, no matter how, you know, awkward it felt constantly putting myself out there where somebody may not be as interested as I am, you know, being in that position where I am regardless putting my name out there constantly, constantly, constantly to anybody that will hear it, I think is, you know, it's probably one of the biggest, you know, factors that you could file under, you know, the luck category. You know, it's especially being somebody so young, where just about everybody I work with is at least 10 years older than me. It sort of puts me in this weird position of, you know, I'm learning a lot, but I'm also feeling slightly out of place. And I'm constantly having to make sure that I am where I'm supposed to be, which is something that, you know, I have resources that most people don't, where I can, you know, ask somebody, hey, I have a quick question about the career in general. And, you know, it's definitely been something that I've been thinking about a lot more recently, because I'm entering my final year of university, and the next what if is, what am I going to be doing full time a year from now? And, you know, it's, those questions get asked a lot of myself, I think, because of my age. But I think at the same time, as long as you're constantly asking yourself those questions, you're at least in a position where you're ahead of however many people that would otherwise be coasting, I think.
Yeah, it goes back to that self-awareness, which is going to stand you in good stead. You mentioned putting yourself out there daily. And with that, with every kind of positive comeback, there'll be some no's or even just some complete ghosting.
Yeah.
How do you respond to those?
I don't know if this is the healthy way of dealing with this, but in a weird way, I've come to the point where for every up, you know, no matter the height of that up, I not necessarily need to be expecting it, but I need to know that there will be an equal pull in the opposite direction when, like you said, there's that no, or there's that, like you said, complete ghost. And I think in a weird way, playing devil's advocate to that has helped me stay grounded and has kept me within the drive to continue to go on. Whereas, you know, I could very easily allow a good situation to be something that I ride the coattails of for a very long time. But foundationally, as an artist, probably isn't good for me to do. And, you know, like you said, that constant sort of reminder that there's always going to be one no, sort of getting used to that and understanding that, you know, even in a situation where it's no now, if I circle back with somebody in X amount of time, you know, depending on the situation, if it was no for a reason out of their control, maybe a yes. You know, because like we said, this is so different from your traditional 9-to-5. And I think people initially tend to think that means what you're doing, where you're not in an office. But no, it means quite literally every single aspect of your day-to-day operation as somebody in a creative industry. You know, it ebbs and flows, it fluctuates in a lot of ways that I don't think people expect, even when they are anticipating it.
what you're saying there is to not put too much emphasis on the yeses, because then the no's don't hit, or the ghosting doesn't hit quite as hard. They both are what they are. To get one, you need the other. It keeps you measured and in a confident state to go again.
You know, I think that goes back to, like you said, the methodical way of thinking about things. And it's something that I've never done so much as like actually written it out and mapped it out. But, you know, that self-awareness of, okay, I've just been given the opportunity to do my second preseason tour with Arsenal from almost a third person perspective of myself. What does that look like in terms of where I have gone up until this point? And where can I then go with it in ways that I hadn't necessarily thought of before? You know, as a means of not only putting myself into one box, but like you said, it sounds very American for me to say this, but you can't win them all. What does that then look like in terms of, you know, when preseason tour is over? Because it's not like this is going to be perfect from here on out. You know, it's not like you walk through a door and someone locks it behind you and says, this is the level that you're at. You're not going to fall back from here. It's only forwards. And I think that is something that I've constantly, you know, just through the day-to-day, experiencing the day-to-day operation, I guess, of being in this industry, it's sort of taught me that, you know, that's not always guaranteed. And you need to sort of continue that same hunger that you had when you got your first gig, so to speak.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Matt. So would you say that getting the second Arsenal pre-season tour would be, so you, that would be a convenient bookmark to look at from 1 year to the previous. Would you consider that not lack of progress, but falling into a lane? So it's great for the payday, great for the portfolio, great for the connection, but you know, you're where you were the previous year in terms of what you're doing. And is that, are you seeing that as a negative?
You know, I sort of had that sort of very brief thought with myself, because after that tour had finished, I was looking at my, this just sounds very superficial, but I was looking at my Instagram grid and I was sort of just looking at from here to here, what did it look like? And I had, you know, I did have the brief thought of it's very one dimensional. You know, obviously from a technical side and an artistic perspective, I felt as I had obviously improved, because I had, you know, I was given more access the second time around. I was trying more things because I felt more comfortable. But, you know, grand scheme of things, it felt, you know, I came out of that preseason tour, I came out of that preseason tour thinking to myself, okay, now let's try music photography. And whether or not I was realizing it at the time, it was probably that voice that I had said just a few minutes ago of always making sure that you're doing something different and that you're opening up, you know, the options and the lanes. And, you know, it's something that having that self-awareness has taught me to constantly be thinking about. But at the same time, I also need to remind myself that there's so much time. So even when I'm having that thought of you might want to see what else you can do with this, you know, I really try and also make sure I'm not getting too caught up in the rat race of having it all finished by the time I'm 24.
Yeah, very good point. There's no harm in having a few Arsenal pre-seasons in the bag.
Right.
And, you know, in your early 20s, and then branching out from that. You're absolutely right. Sorry to try and, I was trying to expedite your career progress times 10.
No. No, but at the same time.
It was just a curious point, yeah, because, you know, there are convenient markers that make us look back on something, an anniversary, a birthday or whatever, that makes you always look back to the previous year. Where was I when X? So I guess, yeah, in terms of a career and progression and things like that, that's a convenient bookmark for you. But then I guess there's also the you're contesting with some fear of not you, one would contest with the fear of saying no to an opportunity like that, because then
exactly. So
what a privilege to be asked by Arsenal to cover this and to earn a living doing that. But then if creatively you're at that point where you think, oh no, I need to kind of expand from that, saying no is a brave move.
Right.
And is that something that you've come across at this stage of your career yet, the saying no to something?
In a weird way, it feels, and you know, I feel like you could almost ask anybody this and they would give you something of a similar answer. You know, it's like I said before, you're never particularly safe. You know, that door is never locked behind you. And I think in a certain sense, where a lot of photographers run into that unhealthy way of looking at things, and I'm just as culpable to this as anybody else, is almost saying yes out of necessity. Whereas I think, you know, the purest artist might say no because they know that right now this is not necessarily something I need. And, you know, it just goes back to the whole way, quote, the industry has been, you know, sort of set up to sort of, you know, you need to get as far as you can, as quickly as you can. And, you know, how much social media has played into that, I don't really know what I could say. But, you know, there's definitely an emphasis on getting as much as you can, as quickly as you can, so that you can then turn around and say, okay, now I'm ready to open up the doors, which as somebody who is probably too self-aware for their own good, I've realized that that's probably not the best way of doing things, but it's probably the quickest way to get where I want to go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. There's clearly a lot of drive that runs through you. Is that coupled with a competitiveness as well with yourself and even with other people? Because it's quite
100%,
it must be like I'm not in that field, but I, you know, I've haven't spoken to other guys that are in there. Devin, a great example. Right. The level of competitiveness when you're in the actual arena to get the shot requires an element of steel. And how have you found that? Is that something that you naturally have in you, or is that something that you've had to kind of get up to speed with pretty quickly?
It was, to say that it wasn't in me is an understatement, because because you know, like we said at the beginning, you know, I'm more of the romantic. It's a lot more emotional for me. So to be in a situation where somebody is, you know, somebody who is damn near twice my age, willing to say, not literally say this, but figuratively go, you're not going to get this, I am. I've had that experience on several occasions. And, you know, if I let that get to me, I would be done. You know, I can have the 5 minutes where I think to myself, this really sucks. But then I can then look at it from the perspective of, this is not necessarily what you're dealing with, but this is, you know, the level of what it requires. And this is why not many people do this. And to be in a position where I'm being asked to do these things at a high level, it's representative of, in a weird way for me, how much do you want it? You know, because there's only a finite number of spots, you know. Only one person had the opportunity, and only one person was required to shoot the photos of Messi when he won the Ballon d'Or yesterday. And it's not like, you know, I feel this emotionally. That's not necessarily going to get you a job because 10 other people feel it emotionally. So, you know, that's probably the biggest learning curve that I would say for myself and just for anybody that's young, you know. Yes, it's great and it's necessary that you feel this on an emotional level, but there's a room full of other people that feel that as well. So there has to be something that sets you apart from everybody else.
I guess it's that it means having that ability to dust off those incidents or those instances pretty quickly. Because right. Like you say, there are that many people that want this. Some are not going to get it. Some are not going to get the shot. Some are not going to get the job. You've just got to move forward. once you've asked yourself if that is what you want. And it's having that check-in, I guess, that's really important, isn't it?
Right.
Because, yeah, the ability, it goes back to what we were saying earlier on, the ability is one thing. The desire to use that ability and actually enjoying it are separate things entirely. So when yeah. you're finding yourself in that position where there's someone twice your age that's trying to kind of knock you off track, for want of a better word, or you know, yeah. guard you off the ball, that's the right time to ask yourself how much, like, if you want to get back up, basically.
Exactly.
Fast forward 20 years, mate, it could be you nudging someone else out of the way and saying, nope.
Well, yeah.
For Jim Bellingham's yeah. 25th Ballon d'Or.
No, yeah, exactly. Get ready for the centennial photo shoot at that point.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mate, I've really enjoyed this chat. It's been really actually quite inspiring to hear such a measured approach from someone. This is not, again, to sound condescending, but to hear such a measured and mature approach from someone of 21. Because, like, no, as I hinted at earlier on, this is something that I came into quite late. Only found that kind of focus in my 30s. And right. To have it now at 21, you know, yeah, that's dangerous in a good way. you'll have whatever you want at your feet, basically, if you keep going the way you're going. Which I see on social media is leading you to the UK in the winter and then Spain in the summer.
It is, yes. I obviously the details of everything I have to still work out, but I'll be coming back to London in January. Oddly enough, to do some more work with Arsenal.
That's it.
No, right? But you know, just you know, I'm reaching that point now. And like you said, having that opportunity is, you know, it's something that I feel as if I've had to sacrifice so much for at my age. But at the same time, at my age, there's still so much more to do. And, you know, having outlets and sort of resources like yourself at my disposal, you know, it would be remiss of me to say that also hasn't been a massive, massive aspect to my success so far. Because, you know, prior to that, it felt as if I didn't really know what this looked like. And, you know, through sort of, you know, more or less campaigns like yourself that you've sort of brought out into this industry, it's hard to understate or hard to overstate just how helpful stuff like this has been, to be honest with you.
That's great. That's really great, mate. I think it's one thing having the resources available because they're there for everyone, but it's knowing how to use them. And it's a reflection of you yourself that people respond and offer the help in the way that they do, right?
Right.
So if you get an opportunity to give yourself a pat on the back, make sure you do that. Someone once told me that there's... self-praise is no praise. I disagree. I think that that's the only praise you should look for rather than the validation that comes externally, because that can just be taken away just as quickly and you'll have the rug pulled from under your feet. So don't be shy to pat yourself on the back and tell yourself you're doing a good job, mate, okay? Because you are.
Thank you, I appreciate that. I'm my own worst critic as well. So,
well, yes, because you're a creative. That's one of nature's cruel tricks.
Absolutely.
Even if you're lying to yourself, just tell yourself, "Well done." Just say it.
that's the goal for the rest of today. Then, thank you for that.
Yeah, mate, it's been great. Thanks for chatting with me, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes next, mate.
Absolutely, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, to be honest with you. It's been absolutely incredible. So, thank you.
Nice one. Take it easy, mate, and I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you. It's you as well. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you haven't already, I'd love you to hit the follow button and forward it on to a friend. You can also find us on social media via @NPLHMag and subscribe to our weekly newsletter via nplhmag.com. See you next time. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. Don't forget to hit the follow button, and I'll see you next time.